Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
5 minutes past 8 in Lagos, 9:05 here in Bonn, Germany. Good morning and thanks for joining Africa Link this Tuesday, June the 21st. I'm Crispin Mwakideu. Our main stories: the Nigerian Naira loses nearly one-third of its value after government allows devaluation of the currency. Exporters have welcomed the move, but ordinary consumers are concerned about rising prices.
Already surviving is difficult. And now if prices of products goes up, then it's going to be more difficult to survive.
And in Ghana, how e-agriculture is making a difference in the lives of farmers.
The farmers are given electronic codes where all their informations are preloaded into the system, and then they send it to the dealer and they buy the fertilizer.
That story coming up on our Making a Difference segment. So stay tuned because we have got more stories lined up for you.
Top story.
Free falling, that's what is happening to the Nigerian currency, the Naira. On Monday, it plunged by more than 40% after the government allowed it to trade freely against the US dollar. This was the first time Africa's biggest oil-producing nation opted for such a move. Over the last 16 months, the Nigerian government had rejected the idea of devaluing the Naira, even though other oil-producing nations such as Russia, Angola and Kazakhstan allowed their currencies to fall after oil prices collapsed. Businesses say a freely floating Naira will boost the economy. But as Samuel Okoya reports from Lagos, a weaker currency can be painful medicine for an ailing economy.
Nigerians are closely following the financial market to see the performance of the local currency, the Naira. The central bank on Monday removed the peg of the Naira to the US dollar. The Naira fell automatically by 20%. For a country that imports heavily, including basic items like toothpicks, this dramatic fall in the value of the Naira is not good news for many. Charles Leonard, a businessman who imports household items, says a weak Naira is bad for importers.
When Naira is devalued, it will definitely affect the rate at which you bring in stuff. And naturally, because the prices at which you'll be able to sell will not be easy for people to buy. It will definitely affect your selling price. The average importer now faced with this kind of situation is like being faced with double-edged sword.
The Naira was pegged to between 197 and 199 for one US dollar for the past 15 months. In early morning trading on Monday, its value fell to 270 for one US dollar. President Muhammadu Buhari had previously argued against a currency devaluation, saying a weaker Naira will mean the prices of goods will go up. The implication, he said, is that ordinary Nigerians will suffer. Ordinary Nigerians like Joseph Blabo says the fall of the value of the currency will create more hardship at a time the country is going through an economic downturn following the fall in oil prices.
Since the Naira has been devalued, then we are going to have a more higher price than the initial price we used to have. Already surviving is difficult. And now if prices of products goes up, then it's going to be more difficult to survive.
International financial institutions like the World Bank have hailed the decision by the Nigerian Central Bank. Atiku Samuel, a local economic expert, says allowing the currency to find its true value is healthy for the economy.
The effect of inflation will be felt massively this year, but by next year we'll see it evening out. So overall, I would say, well, it's good for job creation, it's good for how you manage inflation, it's also good for the overall economic situation. I'm talking from the macroeconomic perspective. It's when the supply shock is actually lifted and then dollars begins to flow in back into the economy, we see it even now. The effect becomes turns directly to positive.
This is the first time the West African country has floated its currency. The central bank decided that the move was necessary in response to a growing shortage of foreign exchange created by slumping oil prices.
DW correspondent Samuel Okoya reporting in Lagos. Whereas Nigerian consumers may be jittery about the impact of a weaker Naira, Obadi Mailafia, a former deputy head of the Nigerian Central Bank, told DW there is reason to be optimistic.
This is the first day of the implementation This is the first day of the implementation of the flexible exchange rate regime that was announced earlier by the Central Bank of Nigeria. We expect that the economy and exchange rate will stabilize after a while, precisely because keeping it artificially high was sending the wrong signal. At this stage, we should wait and see how things will turn out. The system is credible. It is the market that will shape the future tone of the exchange rate. I think we should be guardedly optimistic.
And it's not only Obadi Mailafia who welcomed the devaluation of the Naira. German investors in Nigeria are also cautiously upbeat, as my colleague Mark Caldwell found out when he spoke to Bebel Freyer. She's part of the German delegation of industry and commerce in Nigeria, and she says a weaker Naira will help Nigerian entrepreneurs to access loans. And these are entrepreneurs who are keen to do business with Germany.
We all believe that this is at least a move which gives, especially for the small and medium scale enterprises, hope that dollars were available for them in the future now. And it was not, they really suffered under this foreign exchange. I'm talking for the German-Nigerian partnership. We have seen a reduction in trade and business activities because people were not really able to access loans, put up the infrastructure of smaller or medium scale loans, because the payback possibility was not clear. It was never clear how and to which exchange rate the euro loans or dollar loans be paid back to the investor.
Let's talk a bit about the timing of this decision. Was everybody surprised by this announcement?
No, we have already gotten a little bit of an idea that people were talking, that there will be changes. So we were actually waiting for it. A few weeks now that we heard that government is taking the issue very serious now, and we were not sure what it is exactly. We were not briefed.
To what extent has this step boosted German investors' confidence in President Buhari and his administration?
I think this step boosts German investors' confidence because we have a lot of German businesses who are ready to come to Nigeria and who are very interested, especially in the small and medium scale areas, who have partners already and who got a little bit stuck in the recent months because of this unavailability of dollars and could not proceed with their business plans. I believe now there will be a big request in US dollars, of course, because there are a lot of businesses, Nigerian businesses, who have already proper business projects in their pockets and would like to see them moving. It puts much more confidence into German-Nigerian business sector.
Bebel Freyer from the Delegation of Industry and Commerce in Nigeria.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
And still to come, the migrant southern route. But for now, let's stay in Nigeria, northern Nigeria for that matter. Religious police in the predominantly Muslim state of Kano are cracking down on Muslims who fail to observe fasting during the holy month of Ramadan. They say they have been arresting people for violating rules on eating and drinking, even though their right to carry out such arrests under Nigerian law is dubious. Nasir Zango reports from Kano.
Since Ramadan began on June the 6th, the Kano State Hezbollah Command has deployed its men to strategic places in the state to ensure compliance with the rules of Ramadan, which is also known as the third pillar of Islam. Those who are found to be violating the rules are taken to the headquarters of the religious police force, where they are asked to explain their actions. The deputy commandant of Kano's Hezbollah religious police, Nabahani Usman, said that those arrested for violating the rules of Ramadan concerning eating and drinking would be prosecuted and could be sentenced to several strokes of the cane in public.
What we do when we normally arrest is we have a special department called Guidance and Counseling Unit. This unit comprises of eminent Islamic scholars who will invite a person recite the verses of the Holy Quran as well as prophetic traditions to him and tell him that he should make sure that he's observing this injunction of the Almighty Allah. From there, some of them will comply and start to fast. And when we discover that the person is notorious, we normally keep him here at Hisba for 1-2 days to teach him how he can observe that fasting. And at the end of the day, if all these two methods cannot be what the desired goal cannot be achieved, we normally refer him to court so the court can conduct what they call ASR for that person. Maybe some lashes for him.
But this action by the Hisbah police has been strongly criticized by human rights activists who accuse the religious police of crossing their boundaries. Barrister Aoud Blam of Karti is an activist and also a lecturer in the Faculty of Law at Bayero University in Kano State. He says the Nigerian constitution does not allow the Hisbah to arrest or punish anybody for not fasting.
I am not aware of any law that makes fasting compulsory in Nigeria, whether on Muslims or on any other person in the country. Therefore, I call on the Hisbah to be very cautious in discharging their responsibilities. Let them know that it is a law that established them and they must abide by law.
During my visit to the headquarters of Hisbah in the Sharada area of Kano State, I found many people who had been arrested for not observing fasting. Some of these Gandai, as they are popularly called, explain their reasons for not fasting.
I was arrested for smoking cigarettes in the Sabon Gari area of town.
To tell you the truth, I have chronic ulcer. I am constantly using both modern and herbal medicine to cure it.
This is not the first time the Hisbah religious police have cracked down on people not observing the rules of Ramadan in Kano State. Complaints by non-Muslims who said they were suffering from the restrictions fell on deaf ears.
Nasir Zango reporting from Kano.
Africa on the move.
On the 4th of August, in less than 2 months' time, Cameroon is set to join several other African countries by entering into a key trade deal with the European Union. The deal, known as EPA, or Economic Partnership Agreement, gives African exporters unlimited access to the European market. But local Cameroonian producers are worried that as soon as the deal is signed, cheap European products could soon be flooding the Cameroonian market. In this Africa on the Move report presented by Isaac Mugabe, Hilke Fischer meets an activist seeking to protect the interests of local Cameroonian producers.
Economist Yvonne Takang is visiting a food factory outside the capital, Yaoundé. Locally manufactured products at the factory are rare and should become more competitive, she says.
If you visit so many parts of Cameroon today, you realize that most of our food-producing industries have been killed.
The 33-year-old activist and her organization, the Citizens Association for the Defense of Collective Interests, have taken it upon themselves to campaign for the rights of local producers. At the local supermarket, Cameroonian products can be found only on the very bottom shelf. On the top are mainly imported goods from the EU. Takang believes that the EU products will become even more prominent with the upcoming free trade agreement with the European Union, called the Economic Partnership Agreement, or EPA. From August onwards, Cameroon will eliminate import taxes on EU products. 12 years ago, she nearly had to shut down her business. At the time, frozen chicken imports from the EU flooded the country. The chicken was so cheap that local farmers simply couldn't compete. Takang and her organization have been supporting farmers like Logmo. In the past, their protests stopped the imports. Now Logmo is afraid that history might repeat itself.
We have seen this before. And once the frozen chickens enter the market, the small farmers will suffer again.
Back in Yaoundé, Yvonne Takang has organized a stakeholder meeting. This time, journalists and economists are meeting representatives of Cameroon's government and the EU. These meetings are important, says Norbert Belinga, the Inspector General at the Cameroon Customs Administration.
Meetings like these are very welcome because then people can voice their concerns and the government can respond and also talk about finding solutions for these concerns.
At the meeting, EU representative Catherine Rena shared information that allayed some concerns of Yvonne Takang's civil society organization.
Well, I was informed about frozen chicken that was apparently spamming the Cameroonian market. So this will never ever happen again because frozen chicken is excluded from liberalization.
Which is nice to know, but according to The Economist, it doesn't solve all the other issues at hand.
And this is why she proposes a more radical solution.
If this is not going to be advantageous to us, and if Cameroon is not yet prepared, and if the other countries have not joined, maybe we should put a hold on the implementation of EPAs.
Even if the EU pumps millions of euros into local businesses as promised, experts believe that many small and medium-sized businesses will still not be able to compete with European products. Yvonne Takang fears that the agreement will put a brake on Cameroon's much-needed industrialization.
That report was written by Hilke Fischer. Hardly a week passes by without news of migrants drowning or being rescued in the Mediterranean. Tens of thousands, it appears, are willing to risk their lives to enter Europe via the northern route. But did you know about the southern route? South Africa is also a destination for Ethiopians, Somalians and others fleeing war, oppression and poverty. Martina Shivkovsky has been speaking to Tina Gelly, regional spokesperson for the UN Refugee Agency UNHCR in Southern Africa, to find out how South Africa is coping.
South Africa has about 120,000 recognized refugees and then another million asylum seekers who have cases pending. I think the biggest challenge in South Africa is that according to the national legislation and their constitution and everything, refugees have rights. They have rights to access social services, they have the right to work, they have the right to freedom of movement. There are no refugee camps in South Africa. But the challenge comes with the implementation of those rights. Sometimes when they try to access social services, they face a lot of discrimination. And there's also a problem with discrimination and xenophobia, and some of them becoming targets for the attacks. And many of them are making strong contributions to their communities, to the economy, and that's not recognized. They're often only seen as a burden.
How is South Africa protecting then migrants from xenophobia, since that's quite a phenomenon in South Africa?
When we had the last major outbreak in 2015, the government response was pretty quick. They didn't want the same thing that happened in 2008 to happen again. And I think there are different departments that are really making efforts to try to promote social cohesion and community integration so that people understand that refugees are here because they've been forced to flee their countries because of war and persecution.
Given the numbers and the crisis you have just mentioned, is South Africa coping with this influx?
Yes, actually, South Africa is, I think, coping in terms of, remember, I did mention a million asylum seekers, but those are the cases that are pending. So we don't actually know if all of those million people are still here. Some of them may have gotten alternative permits, such as immigration permits, like the 270,000 Zimbabweans who applied for immigration permits. There is a challenge in terms of a backlog at the appeals level, and UNHCR is working together with the Department of Home Affairs to try to look at these cases, see which ones are still active, and those that genuinely deserve asylum can get asylum granted, and then those that are here for economic reasons or for other reasons can either get alternative permits or find another solution.
Is there a regional approach to deal with the increasing refugee crisis in Southern Africa?
Yeah, well, there's the MIDSA, which is the Migration Dialogue in Southern Africa, where the countries come together and they try to share best practices and to try to develop programs and policies so that migrants can be received with dignity and that refugees are able to seek asylum. It's definitely very challenging to try to regulate everything, especially with the borders being so vast and open. But there's definitely an effort being made on the part of the government, but there is no easy fix.
Regional spokesperson for the UN Refugee Agency UNHCR in Southern Africa, Tina Jelly.
Making a difference.
E-agriculture is coming to Ghana. But what is e-agriculture? Well, it means using mobile phones to get essential information to Ghanaian farmers where and when they need it. And it really appears to be making a difference because, as Maxwell Sook reports, as many as 3 million farmers are profiting from the scheme.
In a windy weather and glimmering sunshine, Abukari Fusheni weeds his maize farm. Like many other farmers in Shishego, around Ghana's largest northern city, Tamale, the 53-year-old farmer is celebrating better harvest in this farming season.
We were getting bad yields,
You could just farm the whole season, and your harvest can't sustain you and your household.
Last year, Ghana's Ministry of Food and Agriculture introduced an internet-based platform called eAgriculture. Fusheni and over 3 million farmers across Ghana signed up for the project. Via mobile phones, farmers get access to technical support and useful information free of charge. Fusheni again.
Even if you're at the farm and there is a problem, you can call them. You will get the solution.
Ibrahim Mahama, another farmer registered in the project, tells me about the effectiveness of the technology.
If the technology had not come, we will still be suffering, just like in the past. We wouldn't have known what to do, but now we are happy farmers.
The government adopted the e-agriculture platform after numerous challenges with issues like theft, inadequate extension agents, and travel costs. Baba Musa, Zonal Resource Manager for the e-agriculture project in Northern Ghana, explains.
In this model, the agri-extension agents, they register the farmers. It comes into the system and the farmers are given electronic codes where all their informations are preloaded into the system and then they send it to the dealer and they buy the fertilizer. Initially, it was manual, through paper, and there were a lot of leakages.
AEA is a popular acronym referring to Agriculture Extension Agents. Prior to the launch of the e-agriculture platform, there were serious concerns about the effectiveness of an electronic system due to high level of illiteracy among farmers in rural parts of the country. It is estimated that about 80% of Ghanaian farmers cannot read nor write. Frederick Kwebna Akwa, a consultant with the platform, tells me how they did it.
In fact, once you are signing on to the system, you get to select your preferred language, and that one becomes your default language setting. Now, anytime you pick your phone, that phone you used, to call the system automatically recognizes you, so the information that comes to you will not come in English, but will come in the dialect.
Idrisu Imoro is one of the few extension officers in Tamale. He is already attending to a farmer on the telephone when I arrived. For him, the difficulty of traveling longer distance to meet farmers in person has been removed.
We used to roam, go to the farmers, their houses. So now most of them, they will call you and tell you that I have this problem. So if it can be solved through the phone call, you do it. But if it needs your presence, then you have to go to the farmer.
The government claims this e-agriculture scheme has bridged the gap between agri-extension officers and farmers. The technology has indeed been helpful to hundreds of thousands of farmers, but there are still many more that are cut off from mobile phone technologies. But as mobile phones are rapidly spreading to rural parts of Ghana, the Ministry of Food and Agriculture hopes the e-agriculture project will be extended to them as well.
Maxwell Soak reporting in Tamale, northern Ghana. As always, before we go, here's a summary of our main stories. The Nigerian naira has lost more than a third of its value after the government let it fall freely against the dollar for the first time. Cameroon is bracing itself for cheaper European imports, and South Africa is grappling with the rising number of asylum seekers. And in other news, the International Criminal Court is today expected to sentence former Congolese Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba on charges of war crimes and crimes against humanity in the Central African Republic. We shall be bringing you reactions after that sentencing. We welcome your thoughts and comments on this program. You can send us an email to feedback.africa@dw.com or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to country code 491609575910. And there's more news on the continent at dw.com/Africa. Thanks for your company, and until tomorrow, same time, I'm Crispin Mwakideu. Enjoy your day.